in general, humans not act as rational decision makers, but actually are predictably irrational. What actually makes us predictably irrational? What are the reasons for this?
In general, my metaphor for the human mind as a decision-making apparatus is of a vintage Swiss Army knife. And let me break this into two, vintage and Swiss Army knife. Let's start with the Swiss Army knife. The Swiss Army knife is not particularly good at anything. There's not a single task that you would say, I need a knife, let me find a Swiss Army knife. I need a can opener, let me find a Swiss Army knife. I need tweezers, let me find it. The Swiss Army knife is not good. It's not excellent at anything. It's quite okay in lots of things. And its greatness is that it's quite okay in lots of things and that we can carry it with us very easily. Our mind is the same thing. Not really excellent in almost anything. AI is proving it to us now very easily, but quite good in lots of things, and we can carry it with us when we go. So that's the first part there. Swiss Army knife. The second element of this metaphor is the vintage. And the idea of the vintage is that our Swiss Army knife was designed under evolutionary period in a very different time. It was designed when we were roaming the savannas. So we have, for example, a sensor for snakes. When you see a snake, you get frightened immediately. You don't need to learn, we inherited. When we see a tiger, we get afraid. Now, these are very useful decision apparatus tools for a long time ago. It wouldn't be the tools you would create for the modern world. So we have this vintage Swiss Army knife. It was never that good, but now it's not good and not relevant, but that's still what we carry with us. So we carry this set of tools that are designed for snakes and knives and living in a small community. And now we need to live, deal with cryptocurrency and living for 30 years after retirement and choosing a healthcare plan and trusting somebody from Niger who is sending us an email about being a prince of some sort. And it's just not the right tools. And there are two approaches of how to deal with this. One approach, you can think about the approach of cars. Basically, what cars engineers, they look at accident rates every year. They analyze all the accidents and they say, how do we understand human nature and the faults in human nature and make technology cover those up? So they say something like, oh, these people don't understand safety distance. Let's give them a sensor for that. These people can't seem to move their heads to the side to look for traffic. Let's do a side mirror. They don't seem to do this. They basically try to understand human weakness and try to get the machine to compensate. That's one approach. The second approach can be thought in general of the approach of social media. Social media, they also get better every year. But the way they get better every year is they also understand human weaknesses, but now they try to take advantage of us.
Yes.
So they say things like, oh, these people seem to have a hot button about gossip. Let's use more gossip. Oh, they prefer more pictures and less this. They prefer more movies and this. They prefer bad things over good things. They prefer emotions over cognitive. They prefer trust over arguments. And they basically do this. So, in all cases, we are flawed, and we are flawed physically. And what we've done with our physical flaws is that we build the world around us. We have a hard time standing, so we have chairs. We have a hard time regulating temperature. We have air conditionings and heaters. We have a hard time seeing, so we have glasses. And we don't take people and we say, deal with that. You can't run very fast, deal with it. No, it's happening. Let's give you a car or bicycle or plane. The mental world is the same way. Say, let us understand where we are frail in terms of our mental capacity. And then hopefully we take the car approach and we make things better. But sadly, lots of companies take the social media approach. They look at where we fail and try to take advantage of us. But we need to recognize that we are irrational, frail, or limited, And we need to think about what are we doing with this and how do we compensate. I'll give you a very trivial example. In the US, there are mortgages, and mortgages have this element of interest rates. Very simple. And if I show you two mortgages, one with an interest rate of 4 and one with an interest rate of 3.99, you would know which one is better than this. But what they did in the US is they added another dimension called points. And points is a way for you to pay up front an amount to reduce your interest rate. Now, guess what? It really confuses people. You add one more dimension and now you say, oh, what is better, a 3.5 interest rate with 1 point that cost me $10,000 or a 4 point interest rate? People get very confused. Now, the people who are doing this, of course, are doing it to confuse people.
Yeah.
But we could do much better. So the point is that, for example, with the interest rate, you can imagine a tool that would get people to easily solve this problem. We just don't do it.
Yeah. But what tool would you suggest?
So, for example, if you had a web interface that says, how long do you plan to keep this mortgage? Or you could even say, on average, people in this economic term, the interest rate is quite high right now. We hope it would go down. We can assume 3 years on average. What is your take? Do you plan to keep it more or less? And you would give an answer. And then I could say, here is the break-even points between those two things. But instead of telling you, the borrower, to compute that, I would say it's me, the lender, who knows much more and has more data that I can help you make a decision.
Yeah. And have you uncovered any fundamental forces or drives shaping our decisions that we're not necessarily initially conscious or aware of?
So yeah, a lot. But the biggest one is, of course, emotions. And emotions are really interesting because they influence us in dramatic ways, but we don't always see them. So if I ask you to explain to me your choices, let's look at some of your biggest financial choices in the last 3 years, please explain them to me. You would certainly give me reasons that look like rational reasons. When we think about the world, we try to think about the world in an organized way. So we say, here's reason why I made this choice, and reason two, and reason three, and reason four, that we make the story as if those things really drove our decisions. But in reality, often what drove our decision are emotional components. So you asked me what are the biggest elements within our nature that derail us from making decisions. And the biggest one is emotions. And imagine that I come to you and say, Jacob, let's look at the last 3 years. Let's look at the biggest decisions you made in the last 3 years. And let's try and understand why you made those decisions. Now, what we are very good at is telling in retrospect why we made those decisions. I chose this car because of the ratio of distance to safety to cost, and I bought this microphone because of this feature, and I bought this. The reality is that many of our decisions are emotion first, and then we make a decision, and then we tell stories about it. But the stories are after the fact, they're not the reasons. But these are often such good stories that we buy them as well. So emotions not only drive many of our decisions, the quickness in which we start talking about cognition hides from us their influence. Now, there's another interesting thing about emotion. Think about the emotion from an evolutionary perspective. Let's say fear from a tiger. Why would nature want you to have fear? What nature wants you to do is run away.
Yeah.
Why the fear? Nature wants you to see a tiger, run away. Why have an emotion at all? The story about emotion is that emotion in some cases is about the next behavior. So for this behavior, I want you to see a tiger and to start running. And then the fear can come later because the fear is supposed to prevent the next risky behavior. It's not about this one I solved with you running already. So what we find is that there are lots of cases in which the emotion comes after the decision has been made. And it's not about that decision. It's about future decisions of, oh, let's not go to that part of the woods or something like that. So emotion is like reason number one. We are deeply emotional. It's part of our mechanism. And now, just to be clear, emotion is also very beautiful. We fall in love. It's not part of the rational decision making. But we help people. If you see somebody suffering, your heart goes to them. You are able to feel a little bit their pain. This is all not rational. And when somebody gives you an unfair offer, you get pissed off. Not rational. When you see somebody stealing a bag from an old lady, you might run after them to try and stop them. So we're not rational in bad ways, and we're not rational in good ways. And the question, of course, is how do we get more of the good things, more love, more poetry, and so on, and less of the bad things. Another thing that holds us back is our inability to think about the long term. Again, evolution didn't plan on us living 80-some, 90-some years. It didn't plan on us having jobs like the jobs we do. It didn't plan on us doing things like writing books and doing startups and so on. Lots of things were much more quick and short and so on. So we're not designed to think about that.